from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The election crisis in Ukraine has brought that country to a high drama crossroads. With the whole world watching, Ukrainians by the thousands have taken to the streets in a battle over whether their country tilts to Moscow or to Europe, tilts toward real democracy or something else. And just beyond the floodlights in Kiev, the Ukrainian crisis has brought back an old east-west confrontation, too. Russia, Ukraine's giant neighbor, has watched its once total control over Eastern Europe wither. Vladimir Putin has shown a taste for Soviet-style rule. He seems to want Soviet-style neighbors as well. Moscow appeared ready to draw a line in the sand with elections that many Ukrainians, plus the U.S. and Europe, have rejected as rigged. As of tonight, the West-leaning Viktor Yushchenko is not out, and the Moscow-leaning Viktor Yanukovych is not in. And a new era hangs in the balance. Tonight on Point, crisis in the Ukraine and the reemergence of East-West confrontation over Russia's neighbors. We begin tonight in the Ukrainian capital of Kiev, where protesters are still rejecting the disputed results of the November 21st voting there. David Holly is Moscow correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. I asked him what Ukrainians have been focusing on today as the election crisis continues to unfold.
Well, several things all at once. The Supreme Court is hearing a case brought by the opposition leader, Viktor Yushchenko, who is claiming victory despite a vote count that went the other way officially. And they reached no conclusion today but heard a lot of arguments saying that there was too much fraud for the official results to be considered legitimate. Then perhaps even more important in terms of the day's developments, President Kuchma said that if the route to a peaceful solution is to have a new election, then let's go ahead and do it. That marks further erosion of Prime Minister Yanukovych's bid to be recognized as the official winner of the November 21st election.
So does that mean that President Kuchma is backing away from his longtime ally and Moscow's man in this drama, Viktor Yanukovych?
Yes, I'd describe that as backing away from him. It is not a full endorsement of Yushchenko's position because Yushchenko, the opposition leader, who's seen as basically pro-Western because he wants better ties with Western Europe and the United States, he would like to see a revote of only the second round of the election, the runoff between himself and Yanukovych, sometime in December. But what President Kuchma seems to be advocating as the most likely solution is a whole new election, which would be 3 months from now and could have different candidates.
David Holly, give us a sense of the drama around these developments today. Do you still have thousands of Ukrainians in the streets of Kiev? What's the level of tension there?
Yes, there are tens of thousands of people in the central square. There's an underlying tension, but the opposition has been careful to keep their people in a festive mood rather than an angry mood. There's of course, underlying anger, but the rally is sustained partly by an endless series of rock and other music performances. And the Yushchenko supporters feel like they're winning and on the path to victory, which also keeps them in a festive kind of mood.
Now, why do they think that? Moscow has seemed to be, and Russian President Vladimir Putin has seemed to be, very committed to the victory of Prime Minister Viktor Yanukovych. And why does the opposition think they might be going their way?
Well, number one, because they have been able to have so many people in the streets and such a sense of dominance of public opinion, at least in Kiev, which, of course, the capital is important. But also extremely important, the very strong diplomatic support from Western European governments and the United States. It's quite unusual for other governments to come in so strongly saying that an election was fraudulent and that they don't want to recognize the officially announced winner as a legitimate president.
And President Kuchma today, before his statement calling for new elections, was on the phone with the Dutch Prime Minister, with U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell, we read.
Well, that's right. And that's part of what I'm talking about. Kuchma is clearly responding to some of this international pressure.
But what about the pressure from Moscow? They're right next door. They have a lot of friendly citizens in the Ukraine. And there's even been talk of security forces on the border or inside Ukraine. What about their leverage?
their position is also important, but I think their practical leverage is probably less than that of the West. And there have been some signs of flexibility in Russia's position as well. I think they're looking for damage control at this point. They recognize that things are running against Yanukovych. And I think that Russia, Moscow, President Putin, care deeply about maximizing their influence in the Ukraine, but they also are probably prepared to cut their losses and try to see a peaceful settlement here, whatever it takes.
And, of course, this is a country, the Ukraine, that has its own fault lines, east-west. Talk today of eastern regions of the country considering withdrawing from the Ukraine, seeking autonomy, even the sovereignty.
Well, there's no question that there's real anger in the east and real support for Prime Minister Yanukovych. He probably could get, you know, a good solid 40% of the vote in a completely fair and honest election. So it's a big portion of the country. And the East is largely Russian-speaking, and the West is largely Ukrainian-speaking. The two languages are very similar. But there's a genuine East-West kind of social and historical split in Ukraine. And the East, you know, is very unhappy if it turns out that Yushchenko comes out on top and becomes the president. But at the same time, the talk of separatism, a real breakup of the country, is partly inflated rhetoric designed for political leverage in the current crisis. I think calmer heads don't really expect a civil war or a breakup, but the tension is real, and the anger between East and West is real.
So shy of civil war, then, as we talk tonight, David Hawley, do you still sense there the possibility of a crackdown of Moscow and Ukrainian backers pushing through the official victory of Viktor Yanukovych? Or do I hear you saying that it looks like it's headed toward a reversal here, toward the pro-Western Yushchenko?
Well, the crackdown scenario that you mentioned is still one of the scenarios that people talk about. It's also conceivable that the Supreme Court could rule that Yanukovych really is the legitimate victor. But those aren't the scenarios that most people seem to think are the most likely scenarios right now. The momentum seems to be towards some kind of a solution that probably would involve new voting and tighter monitoring to ensure that it's not fraudulent, and the probability that somehow or another Yushchenko would come out on top.
Well, what an amazing week in the Ukraine, and still, this by no means over. David Hawley, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
David Hawley is Moscow correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with me from the Ukrainian capital of Kiev. We are talking tonight about the crisis in Ukraine and the dispute over a presidential election that has made that country an East-West flashpoint. You can join the conversation. What's at stake in the election standoff in Ukraine? Is the whole Russian sphere at risk of sliding back into Moscow-centered authoritarianism? And how aggressively should the U.S. be pushing, and for what? What's more important here, good relations with Vladimir Putin or a free, democratic Ukraine? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight from Chicago is Yohanan Petrovsky, assistant professor of history at Northwestern University. He's a native of Ukraine, taught at Shevchenko University in Kiev. Good evening and welcome, Professor Petrovsky.
Hi.
And also with us tonight from Bethesda, Maryland, Michael McFaul, associate professor of political science at Stanford University. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, co-author of After the Collapse of Communism, Comparative Lessons of Transitions. Michael McFaul, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So here we are, and I want to hear from both of you right away on your sense of the big picture. Professor Petrovsky, we just heard a report from Kiev that was sounded rather optimistic, at least from a European point of view or Western point of view about how things are proceeding there. How do you see this conflict standing right now? Is it still on a knife's edge? Is it going one way or another?
Well, it's difficult make the final decision. There could be different scenarios. We have three powers right now in the country. One power is represented by the opposition, another power is embodied in the Supreme Soviet, and the third one is represented by Viktor Yanukovych, the acting prime minister, who is in fact not acting as prime minister. Each of these powers has different agendas and is pursuing different political goals. So I just wanted everybody to be aware that we are talking not about one particular agenda of one particular group, let's say in this case a pro-Western group of democratic opposition headed by Viktor Yushchenko, but rather about three different scenarios of three different groups.
Michael McFaul, how do you see the agendas, the conflicting agendas at play in Kiev and across Ukraine tonight?
Well, you have a classic revolutionary situation in Ukraine today, and by that I mean when you have two different leaders backed by two different groups that each claim to be the sovereign authority over one country. Yanukovych was congratulated by President Putin for winning the election, and Viktor Yushchenko took the oath of office for the same office. Having said that, I think it's very tense and very important for cool heads to prevail, because in these situations, one extremist or one fool could spark something very tragic. But having said that, I'm cautiously optimistic. I agree with David reporting from Kiev that the momentum seems to have moved with Yushchenko now. I think the statement by President Kuchma that we should have a new election is very important. I would add to that that the campaign manager for Mr. Yanukovych, Sergei Tikhipko, today resigned. You get the sense that those in power are beginning to think of ways to save face and figure out some way to negotiate an out.
And Michael McFaul, is it your sense that Moscow is prepared to cut its losses here and let Ukraine go to the pro-Western candidate in this contest?
Well, first of all, let's be clear. President Putin and his advisors who have been working in Kiev, some of whom are old personal friends of mine, played this absolutely disastrously. This is just a major, major failure. I think the biggest foreign policy of failure for Russia since Putin became president. This notion that somehow they need a Yanukovych victory to maintain their sphere of influence is just nonsense. If Putin had taken a different tact and said, look, I want to see a free and fair election in Ukraine, and I'm prepared to work with whoever wins that, mm-hmm. he would be in a very powerful position today. In fact, the last time that Yushchenko was in Moscow, he pleaded with an audience with President Putin. He's not some radical revolutionary that wants to, spin away and be somehow anti-Russian. It's actually the actions of Kuchma and Yanukovych that have radicalized Yushchenko. So I think this is a big disaster for Putin, and I think they have to now cut their losses, because this notion that somehow Russia is going to defend the Eastern Oblast if they spin out of, declare a secessionist movement, that's a disaster, not only for the West, not only for Ukraine, but for Russia as well.
Yohanan Petrovsky, do you have any concern that Russia might stand by its man to a point of active intervention here, that we might see, I don't know, Russian Secret Service or Russian troops or a real power play by Moscow in the end game of this standoff?
Well, I think we have to take into consideration that whatever they say in Moscow, they are engaged in a political double talk. What I mean by that is that the Ministry of Defense of Russia is claiming there are no Russian troops in Ukraine, but we do know for sure there are riot police troops around Kiev, at least in three different places, three different localities.
You're saying Russian police inside
Russian,
Ukraine, in Kiev?
Russian, what I'm saying, not Russian police, but Russian riot police that knows how to control and how to suppress urban riots.
I haven't read that anywhere. Is it secret? Is it undercover?
It is a semi-secret information which is discussed freely in Ukrainian press, and it is discussed by Ukrainian journalists. And also, I've heard from people who I am in contact with in Kiev, they were coming up to the soldiers who looked like Ukrainian soldiers. They were in Ukrainian uniform, but they were when they started to talk to them, they realized that these people talk Russian with a sharp Moscow accent.
So maybe Russia already physically on the ground in Kiev. There's a lot more we've got to learn here. Yohanan Petrovsky, Michael McFaul, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the crisis in Ukraine and the reemergence of East-West confrontation over Russia's neighbors. You can join the conversation. What is at stake in the election standoff in Ukraine? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the crisis in Ukraine and the reemergence of East-West confrontation over Russia's neighbors. You can join the conversation tonight. Does this, when you see the images coming out of Kiev, does it feel like deja vu all over again, like Prague 68 that we're flirting with here, like the old Soviet bear flexing its muscles at its borders? And how aggressively should the United States push for fair elections in Ukraine? What's more important, good relations with Vladimir Putin or a free, democratic Ukraine? Is the whole Russian sphere at risk of sliding back into Moscow-centered authoritarianism? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking tonight with Stanford University's Michael McFaul, with us tonight from Bethesda, Maryland, with Northwestern University's Yohanan Petrovsky, and right now we're joined by from Washington by Gene Fischel. He's an expert on Ukraine at the U.S. Department of State. He is the senior analyst in the Office of Russian and Eurasian Analysis, Bureau of Intelligence and Research at the State Department. Gene Fischel, thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to join you.
We've jumped in and begun to look at this, but as a State Department official, how do you see the stakes for Washington, Europe, Ukrainians, Moscow? What is at stake in this standoff that's underway right now in the Ukraine?
Well, from my point of view, the at stake is not just what happens in Ukraine and Ukraine democracy, which are important issues in their own right, but also the completion of the processes that were begun in 1991, but for various reasons were not pursued to the rational solution. It's very clear that at stake here is not just, again, Ukrainian democracy, but also the future of the region, the question of how the region between the enlarging NATO and a strengthening Russia will develop and in what direction it will go. And most importantly, I think, from my point of view, the question of the future of Europe. What is Europe? How does one define it?
We think we know what the upside here is, that we'll have you describe that. But what's the downside? If this doesn't go well, in your view, if it goes wrong, whatever that means to you, where could we be headed?
Well, I think the negative impacts are just as huge. For example, Ukraine, over the past 5-6 years or so, has played a relatively constructive role within the so-called Commonwealth of Independent States, the nebulous entity that replaced the former Soviet Union after the collapse. Ukraine has been a leader of several countries in the region that have worked to diminish Russian influence in the former Soviet space, and certainly if Ukraine's efforts, if the efforts of the pro-independence movement collapse, and Ukraine is forced to rejoin some sort of a union that's dominated by Russia, and democracy is not allowed to triumph.
And do you think that's what is at stake here tonight?
I think so. I think that's the natural extension of what's going on in the streets of Kiev and other cities of Ukraine tonight.
Well, Michael McFaul, do you see it in those terms? Is this an independence movement, in effect, behind Yushchenko up against a real kind of reassertion of Soviet dominance?
Well, it's not Soviet dominance, it's Russian dominance.
Soviet style, excuse me, yeah.
Yes and no. I mean, I hesitate because in some ways that's the way that Moscow wants us to understand this, right? The Russians who have been involved in this, and Putin himself and the mayor of Moscow, who just said some atrocious things while visiting Ukraine over the weekend.
What did he say?
Well, he said something, I don't remember exactly, it was about witches, orange witches, something. It was an ethnic slur of the worst order.
And orange, of course, has been the color of the Western Ukrainian backers of Yushchenko.
Right. And all along, if you look at the campaign messages and the posters and everything, the Russians who've been working with Yanukovych want to frame this as pro-Russian versus pro-NATO forces. And Bush is Yushchenko, and they emphasize the fact that his wife is American, etc. That, to me, is the wrong – A, that is not the politics on the ground in Ukraine, and B, when we talk about it that way, we, I think, help the Russian cause. In fact, this is about a very, very corrupt and awful government that has been ruling Ukraine for a decade. The people, the majority of Ukraine, not all the citizens of Ukraine, I want to emphasize that, but I think the election results showed very clearly that a majority of Ukrainians want a different kind of government. They want a democratic government. And so I get nervous when I hear that this is about, you know, the East versus the West. No, this is about good democratic government versus corrupt Folks, let's remember Yanukovych is a convicted criminal tied to a mafia organization out in Donetsk. President Kuchma has allegedly ordered the killing of a Ukrainian journalist, Mr. Gengadze. This is not, you know, this is not about ethnicity.
And yet,
this
Vladimir
is about
Putin's
corruption versus democracy.
But Vladimir Putin's interest, presumably, is not in supporting corruption. It's in supporting an extension of Russian power through Kiev, through Ukraine.
Very much so.
Of course, he wants to extend Russian power, but that's not that's you know, that's the objective of all great states, right? And great by that I mean big. That's not the question. The question is, how do you achieve that? The way that he has tried to do it in Ukraine has been absolutely abysmal for Russian interests. If I was a Russian nationalist, I would be embarrassed by what President Putin and his advisors in Kiev have done, because they have really, I think, alienated Yushchenko, who's inevitably going to be, I think, the leader of Ukraine. Mm. And if he's not, remember, then you have an ally in Ukraine, so-called, that will look like Poland was during the Cold War. That's not a real ally. Mm. That's an enemy just being oppressed by an imperial dictator.
Gene Fischel,
so they really played this wrong, I think.
Gene Fischel, Michael McFaul is reluctant to embrace this idea of a kind of a East versus West conflict being played out in Ukraine. He says it's more nuanced than that. How do you see it?
Well, I actually don't disagree. I wasn't talking about East versus West. I was talking about Ukraine rejoining Europe, the traditional Ukrainian European orientation that was
there. But isn't that East versus – if it's joining Russia or joining Europe, isn't that East-West?
Well, that's exactly it. If we talk about East versus West, we get into the Russian thinking on this issue, which is very much zero-sum based. And that's not that's certainly not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the will of the people being reflected in the vote, supporting Mr. Yushchenko's pro-reform, pro-Western agenda, which would help Ukraine become a prosperous nation in the heart of Europe.
If I could add to that,
Yana Petrovsky, please.
I would like to add something to this conversation. I think we need to look first at what are the agendas of big groups who are participating in the political fight, and also how is this different from what is going on in the streets of Kiev. And I think for most people who are in the streets of Kiev, Kharkov, Lviv, Odessa, and other towns and cities of Ukraine, the most important thing is not East and West division, is not the division between Russia and the West. They understand pretty well that Ukraine will be following the integration, economic integration with Russia, as it is following the integration with the European Union.
Simultaneously.
Simultaneously. But for them, the most important thing is that they do not want to live in a totalitarian state. They want to live in a democratic state. And I do not want to blame the other group, the group that supports Yushchenko, the group that supports Yanukovych, of not understanding what is going on. I think we are talking here about two different groups in the streets of towns and cities of Ukraine. One group is expressing its free will and is composed of free citizens. This group supports Yushchenko. Another group is composed of subjects of a totalitarian state, and they support Yanukovych. This is where division goes.
Wow. It sounds certainly like the old language of East-West. A lot of callers want to join us, and I want to begin to invite them in, if I may. Sheila's calling from Weston, Massachusetts. Hi, Sheila. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about the indications that the election was fraudulent.
Yeah.
Specifically, what were the indications that the election was not above board, and in what way was the fraud perpetrated? And if they have if they hold new elections, what is going to be done to ensure that the people believe the results of the election?
Right. How to avoid it next time and get credibility there. Sheila, thanks for that. Gene Fischel, how about it? We've seen reports of 11,000 claims of vote rigging or irregularities. How would you describe for Sheila the irregularities or rigging, I don't know what your word is, of this election on the 21st?
I think outright theft would be another term to use in this case.
Could you describe some of how that happened?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let me tell you what some of the indicators were and then try to briefly explain how it happened as I understand it. First of all, there was an exit poll that was done by a reputable consortium of polling institutions, At the time of the election, the second runoff on November 21st, the exit poll showed that Mr. Yushchenko defeated Mr. Yanukovych by about 11%.
Of course, we saw exit polls in U.S. presidential voting that were quite different than the outcome. So is that a ironclad case that there was rigging somehow?
Well, let me explain how this came about. The three institutions, the three polling institutions that took part in this consortium, conducted the exit polls separately, and then compared their results, and the results were virtually identical. So they did build in some mechanisms to make sure that the results generally reflect the developments on the ground. So there were actually, in effect, three exit polls done as part of this consortium.
Whereas the official result came out 49-something percent for Yanukovych and 46-something percent for Yushchenko.
Yes, with a 2.5% supposed victory margin for Mr. Yanukovych.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that in the regions, in the various oblasts of Ukraine, especially in the east and south, the day before the election, the election authorities and the local officials who are beholden to Prime Minister Yanukovych and to President Kuchma purged the local election commissions of pro-opposition or opposition-nominated commissioners and also threw out opposition observers and others who could have been problematic on the day of the election and certainly during the vote counting.
And then what is alleged to have actually happened? Where's the fraud?
So they but that's very important because they were basically the opposition had no one present during the vote counting in these very populous eastern and southern regions, which allowed for the possibility of fraud. Then the actual fraud occurred at several levels. There was balloting and ballot stuffing and miscounting at the local level. There was also a considerable degree of absentee voting, which is different than in our case. Of people actually voting in one precinct and then getting from their home precinct a ticket of sorts saying that they could vote elsewhere, and they were bussed, from what we understand, by local officials to other polling places to vote again, again, and again. There was quite a bit of mobile voting, that is, voting at home. Usually, it's not higher than 5, 6, 7%. In this case, there were regions where the mobile voting was 30%. That, of course, allows for considerable fraud.
And of course, out of all this came the kind of universal consensus from foreign observers, largely Western observers, that this was stolen. Yohanan Petrovsky, if it goes to another election, are you confident that election can be held in such a way that it will have more credibility?
Yes and no. I think a lot has to be done in order to make it work perfectly well, or at least efficiently. I think the committees that were responsible for this fraudulent counting have to be dismissed, the members of these committees. I think new committees have to be appointed, and this was one of the requirements that Yushchenko put on his agenda yesterday, talking with the acting president Kuchma, that the president has to appoint a new counting committee, and the committees in different towns have to be reappointed, and also they have to be reappointed on the basis of multiple presence of representatives of different political parties, also of the opposition parties that were previously wiped out of these committees.
Michael McFaul, I've got to ask you, at this point, Europe and the U.S. seem to be looking on and saying this has to change, this has to be different, this is terribly wrong. But even if you see it as a miscalculation, a strategic error on Moscow's part, they've clearly thrown their lot on the other side here. They appear to be just as invested in their man as the West is in his. Is Moscow prepared to yield on this? Can it yield?
Well, of course, I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Putin hasn't called me to tell me.
Well, but I mean, it as it's positioned
him,
itself.
Let me say why I think the tide has turned. You're absolutely right. Putin and Russia, his government, went all out to try to win this election and steal this election. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, he went for 3 days to campaign for Prime Minister Yanukovych. He endorsed him. I mean, imagine President Bush going to Mexico and doing that.
Or Canada. It's incredible to imagine. Yeah.
So they went all out, and they blew it. They missed it. I mean, you know, we could add to the list. I mean, the thousands of things that were done here. I mean, turnout in some places was 100%, and 96% of that went to Yanukovych.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows that this was stolen, including the Russians, by the way.
Mm.
That said, they went all out. They didn't get the result they wanted. They fought, and they are surprised by a couple of things. One, they're surprised by the numbers on the streets in Kyiv and that have sustained. And if it's true, I mean, I've heard these reports as well that Russian troops are outside of Kyiv. There is no way that those troops are going to be able to clear 100,000 people out of the streets of Kyiv. And by the way, the Russians aren't great masters at this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Let's recall some of the previous times they've done this.
Yeah,
second, they did not expect the reaction from the West. They totally miscalculated.
They thought the West wouldn't care? They would just say, fine, you take it, it's yours?
Yeah, they thought the West would react in the way that they reacted to the Russian election, by the way, this year, which was not exactly a free and fair one. Kind of critical. The OSCE released their report, and then everybody went on their ways.
Yeah.
The Belarusian election that happened just recently, you know, it was critical, but nobody really lost any sleep over it.
Mm-hmm.
This time, the statement by Secretary of State Colin Powell was really, really hard-hitting. And the U.S. government, which I really think deserves a lot of credit for saying, we're going to fight this one. So they miscalculated there. And now I see signs of trying to maybe think about saving face. And let me just say two other things.
Yeah.
If there is a new election, as Kuchma has now intimated that there could be,
mm-hmm.
where they redo the second round, if there's new elections, that
yes.
Yushchenko can't agree to that, I think then the game's over, because there's no way they're going to be able to get anywhere close to the level of falsification that they had under the best of circumstances, and that only yielded a 3% win for Yanukovych, allegedly. So I think the game's off. I actually wouldn't be surprised if there's an election that's announced and then Yanukovych, in the name of unity, withdraws his candidacy to try to save something.
And basically hands it over. In that case, Gene Fischel, at the State Department, can you imagine eastern Ukraine proceeding with this kind of noises we've heard today about actually withdrawing from Ukraine or seeking extreme autonomy to lean toward Moscow?
I think that's somewhat of an overstatement. What we're seeing in eastern Ukraine and parts of southern Ukraine is more theater than real. If you notice that the Congress Mr. Yanukovych, and there's no doubt that Mr. Yanukovych was behind this effort, of course, that Congress meeting in easternmost Luhansk Oblast the other day, the hall was packed full of functionaries. It was certainly not a popular uprising as we see in Kyiv and other central and western Ukrainian cities. It's a power play. It's designed to give caution to the opposition and to the West, but it's not significant. It's not serious. And frankly, there are signs that Mr. Kuchma and others in Kyiv were actually worried about some of these efforts. And meeting yesterday, I believe, told the eastern governors to knock it off. So I don't take it too seriously.
We've got to take a short break here. Gene Fischel, Yohanan Petrovsky, Michael McFaul, please stick with us. We're talking tonight about the crisis in Ukraine. You can join the conversation. Are the United States and Europe really ready to take on Russia over Ukraine? Have they done it already? Or is it the Ukrainian people who are going to drive this outcome? And why did Vladimir Putin's man in Ukraine think he could steal the election? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the crisis in Ukraine and the reemergence of what sure looks like East-West confrontation over Russia's neighbors. You can join us tonight. Did you think history was over in Eastern Europe, that a democratic future was assured? What do you think now? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests tonight from Stanford University, Michael McFaul, from Northwestern University in Chicago, Yohanan Petrovsky, and from the U.S. State Department, senior analyst in the Office of Russian and Eurasian Analysis, Gene Fischel. Right now, Nikolai is calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Nikolai. You're on the air.
Hi. I am very surprised by the biases that exist in Western media saying that these democratics are, and everybody accepts it. It's so funny that everybody accepts it as a given that the election was stolen, it's all fraud. And, you know, I'm coming from Georgia where there is this new revolution was done by Saakashvili and his Western friends.
Just a year ago, you had your own crowds in the streets.
Right. And you know what? He's a fascist. You know, I was Armenian. And he comes to Georgia with the slogan, Georgia is for Georgians, when 40% of Georgia are not Georgian.
Well, now, this is interesting, Nikolai.
Okay,
so you're Georgian, but you don't accept the representation?
I'm not Georgian. I'm Armenian. So
Armenian.
In terms of Ukraine, what's interesting is that in the East, what's happening there is portrayed completely oppositely than on the West. And what's happened there, as far as I know from my friends in Ukraine and Russia, is that as soon as the exit poll starts to come up, Yushchenko figure out that he is losing. And he starts screaming with some back and support from some...
But the exit polls showed him winning, Nikolai.
Well, the polls were in many areas were showing that he was losing.
Nikolai, I don't want to get lost in the details here, but let me just ask you this. Do you think that the Ukraine should stay in Moscow's sphere of influence?
This is a wrong, ill-posed question, because Ukraine is an independent country, and it's not a matter of being influenced by Russia or by West. What the way how it's portrayed on the West is that it's like a standoff between Russia and West. But Russia is its own country. Ukraine is its own country.
Are you suggesting? I know that some of the campaign material in Ukraine presented Yushchenko as a fascist. Are you saying that by extension from your Georgian example?
No, I don't know Yushchenko that much, but I know that there is a very huge bias in terms of saying Yanukovych did a fraud there. And in fact, he did not as much. I don't see any evidence of that.
Well, I mean, there seems to be an awful lot of evidence laid up. But let us pick it up, Nikolai. Johanna Petrovsky, what about it? How do you interpret what you've just heard from Nikolai?
Two things. Let me say here two things. First, Yushchenko is a complex personality. I would have voted for him not because I know him personally or I like him personally, but because he represents certain values that I share. And what are these values? First, Yushchenko has expressed many times and proved his commitment to democratic standards. He also demonstrated a balanced approach both to European integration and cooperation with Russia. He also stands firmly on Ukrainian national democratic values and not on Ukrainian nationalist values, which are two different things. And he also showed a genuine tolerance toward national minorities in Ukraine.
But when you hear Nikolai say all this talk of fraud is way off, the Western media is biased, the whole thing is a biased picture, how do you interpret where he's coming from?
Well, I think the situation that happened in Georgia cannot be immediately compared to or contrasted with what is going on between Russia and Ukraine. First of all, we have to realize that Ukraine has been a neocolonial country for many, many years, if not for centuries. Ukraine has been under Poland until the end of the 18th century, until the partitions of Poland. Then it became part of the Russian Empire. Then, after a very brief period of Ukrainian independence between 1917 and 1920, Ukraine again became part of Russian Soviet Empire. And its Ukrainian national identity was just wiped out. And Russia forced Russification of certain areas and territories in Ukraine, especially in the east of Ukraine, where they were very successful doing that. So we are talking about the country that right now, 30 years ago, emerged as a post-colonial country and does not want to be, again, a Russian colonial addendum. This is what is at stake.
Michael McFaul, I feel like there are nuances that are somehow still eluding me here. When I get a call like Nikolai's, I try to think how Russians in Moscow might be looking at this. Is it possible that they genuinely see it very differently? Or would even Russians, if they're honest with themselves, see this as a kind of a Moscow power play gone bad, as you describe it?
Well, I think the first thing to recognize is that there are many different points of view of Russians.
Mm-hmm.
We can't talk about Russia having a point of view. We can't even talk about the ethnic Russians that live in eastern Ukraine as having one point of view or not. I mean, I know ethnic Russians in Kharkiv, I should say, instead of Kharkov, who are 100% behind Yushchenko, and I know others who I saw there just a couple years ago that are very nervous about Yushchenko. So let's stop talking about all ethnicities have one point of view.
Oh, absolutely. But take us into those woods. We want to understand what's in there.
Yeah. So what from the Russia, if you're sitting in Moscow and you don't have other alternative means to television and radio independent, and let's remember there's hardly any independent radio and television left in Russia
since
today.
Putin. Yeah.
Cracked down on that. This is what you see on television. You see fascist groups, and there are, fascist groups in Ukraine who then are flashed to Yushchenko, so making the illusion that somehow they're together. Then you see the Russian electoral observer mission, and let's not forget that for the first time that I can remember, the Russians fielded their own delegation with some very senior government officials who declared that it was free and fair. And they also had their own exit polls, and you know the media has distorted the Ukrainian, the two exit polls, by the way. So they get a very different image. Then you get the man on the street interview with some ethnic Russian in Donetsk saying, I fear these, you know, crazy Ukrainians. I long for the days of the Soviet Union. And guess what? Two-thirds of the Russian population within the Russian Federation also long for those days. So I think Nikolai's assessment of Georgia is absolutely wrong, by the way. Saakashvili is not a fascist. But I understand the perception. I don't think it's I think it's inaccurate, but I can understand how people can have that view. But I really want to make one other really important point here.
Please.
This is not the Russians. There are many, many Russians that also want to be part of a democratic Europe, right? I mean, I do survey work in Russia. I've done it for a decade. And the vast majority of Russians actually believe in democracy. They're up against a more authoritarian regime than they are in Ukraine. But let's not forget that Russians in August of 1991 mobilized against a similar kind of coup d'etat. So it's I think we're I'm just very nervous, I guess, about like generalizations about ethnicities. I think it is much more nuanced, as you rightly pointed out.
Gene Fischel, what about that? Washington has given Vladimir Putin a pretty warm embrace in spite of all the ways in which he's trimmed sort of democratic niceties and more than that there. Does Washington bear some kind of responsibility for what's happened in the Ukraine? Did they lead Vladimir Putin to believe that they'd just give it a nod and a wink and let it go?
Look, zero-sum games are very dangerous, and we try to think in different paradigms. There's absolutely no contradiction between having good relations with Moscow and endorsing and supporting democracy movements throughout the world, including in Ukraine.
Even when Moscow is opposing democratic movements.
Well, we've clearly indicated that we disagree with that position, and I just to second what Dr. Mafal said earlier, Moscow made a tremendous error by not reaching out to Yushchenko early on in the campaign.
But if I could add to that, I know Gene's a government official. My own view is somewhat different. That is the statement that Colin Powell released about the Ukrainian elections, which I think was absolutely right on the mark. He didn't release a similar statement about the grotesque violations of democracy and human rights when they had elections in Chechnya.
Meaning what?
Meaning that that was an obvious fraud of an election, and there was no statement by Secretary of State Colin Powell saying...
But are you suggesting that that means the U.S. did, in fact, kind of give a green light?
Exactly. That the embrace of President Putin, who in my opinion has been an anti-democratic force not only in Russia but throughout the region, somehow that we can have our cake and eat it too, I think we have to really call into question what is this great interests that are being served by calling this man a friend, by looking at his heart and seeing his soul. We send very mixed messages, not only in Ukraine, but throughout the world, by the way, when we talk about democracy in one country and we don't talk about it in another.
And here, maybe an example of Vladimir Putin acting on that. Let's take another call. Volodymyr is calling from Waltham, Massachusetts. Hi, Volodymyr, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, I'd like to make a general comment and then one remark about the situation in Donbas region, because I was born there.
And what region is that?
It's the Donetsk region.
In eastern Ukraine, the Russified Ukraine. Region, yes.
Yeah, so if I may, the general comment. It's when people talk about, the confrontation between Catholic and Orthodox, East and West, you know, Ukrainian language and Russian language.
And we should spell that out. Western Ukraine, Roman Catholic, Eastern Ukraine, generally Orthodox.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Or Ukrainian language versus Russian language or speakers. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit more complicated and more simple in a way. We have to bear in mind the fact that during these 14 years of independence, what the Ukrainian authorities were trying to do, they were trying to recreate a mini Soviet Union, only with the support of criminal elements.
Within their borders during this kind of corrupt last decade and so on.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. And what people are doing, they want to be citizens. They want their voices to be heard. They want to be, you know, active players in this game.
You're saying now it's a kind of popular uprising against that Soviet-style
right.
government.
I'm talking about this revolution
yes.
that is taking place
yes.
Right now. And now the minor point about the situation in Donbass. I have relatives there, and I talked to them. And, you know, a couple of days ago, BBC reported that in the city of Donetsk, which
yes.
is the center of this anti-Yushchenko forces,
yes.
separatists, they reported that there was a demonstration and something like 2.5 million people took place in it.
I've not seen that number anywhere else, 2.5
yeah,
million.
That's right. It wasn't
BBC.
Okay, but I just have to say I haven't seen it.
On behalf of the population of the Oblast,
yeah.
by the way.
It doesn't
yeah.
sound reasonable, but take
much.
Us to your point, Vladimir.
Yeah. Donetsk is a city of 1 million, roughly.
Yeah.
So to bring 2.5 million people, you know, mm. you need, you know, catering, you need toilets, you need all this stuff. And the reality, as I know from, you know, telephone conversations, is that in some places, like a town of Torez, at least half of people voted for Yushchenko. But
that didn't show up in the polls. Vladimir, we're nearly out of time here. I thank you for that call. Gene Fischel, where does this leave us? You know, the European Union has expanded. NATO has expanded. Does Russia feel justifiably threatened by an encroachment of the West of Europe at its borders?
Well, I can't speak for how certainly Russia feels or whether it feels threatened or not. But whatever it feels, it is not an excuse to come out on the side of those who try to stamp out Ukrainian popular will within Ukraine in what are supposed to be democratic elections.
Yohanan Petrovsky, let me put the same question to you. We can judge it however we like, but there are national security interests here, and Vladimir Putin appears to be, bringing a new muscularity to Russia's borders. Are we going to see this? Is this where Russia's headed? Are they going to try and insist on more influence to push back against Europe?
Well, I don't think so. I think that Putin is very seriously looking at Ukraine because he thinks if Ukraine joins Russia again, it will allow Russia to reemerge as a new a major post-communist empire in East Europe. However, if Ukraine goes to the West and joins the European club, he will lose the game. And many people in Russia were saying before the elections in Ukraine that these elections is really the litmus paper for what Putin is doing for his foreign and home policy. And I need to say that this litmus paper shows that Putin lost his Ukrainian vote, and he lost his opportunity to make Ukraine, to integrate Ukraine into what could emerge as a new post-communist empire.
And with it, he lost the chance at that new Russian post-communist empire?
Yes, I do think so. Whatever happens in Ukraine, whatever is the result of a third round of the elections, I just wanted to quote an email message that I have just got from a friend of mine.
10 seconds.
No,
give us the heart of it.
Follows, things will never be the same. Will never be the same in this country. This is very important. Something.
Well, history is certainly moving in Ukraine tonight, and I want to thank all of you for really helping us get into it. Yohanan Petrovsky at Northwestern University. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Michael McFaul, Associate Professor of Political Science at Stanford University, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Gene Fischel, Senior Analyst in the Office of Russian and Eurasian Analysis at the U.S. Department of State. We're very grateful to you for joining us. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.